Good evening. You're listening to Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. I'm Dean Becker. Steve Nolan's our engineer. Tammy and Cheryl are here to man the phones and the computers. You're listening in on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, in Galveston, 89.5 FM, and on the Sirius Radio Network, channel 147. Our special guest tonight, Roger Goodman, director of the King County Bar Association in Washington, Seattle, Washington. They have developed guidelines that are well respected and duplicated in various drug reform efforts among the many states. We're also proud to have with us tonight the Romeo Dogs. They're going to be playing at Walters on April 20th, and we're going to get a chance to hear some of their songs and visit with them about the upcoming Houston's Washington Avenue Music Fest. First off, I want to get to a little bit of news. It seems the Attorney General, John Ashcroft, will have to make some decisions about his enforcement priorities among the many public safety issues the Department of Justice handles. He must be held responsible when he implements his schemes. We want him to know that he is not free to shut down our dance clubs, our festivals, and our freedoms. You see what happened, folks? Today, the Senate and the House both passed a bill called the RAVE Act. And basically what it does, it gives the government the opportunity, yea, the obligation to shut down any venue wherein any person uses drugs. So if you happen to go to a club and someone uses drugs in the parking lot, they can take the club from the owner. That's what just happened today in our good old Congress. You stop and think about it. You know, the RAVE Act, the RAVE Act, what is it meant to do? It's meant to stop drug, you know, sales, distribution, etc. But what did they pass it with? They put it in the Amber Alert Act. They put it in a bill that's supposed to respect the rights of children stolen, taken across state lines, raped, and left to die in the desert. This has nothing to do with the Amber Alert. Yet they stuck it in at the last moment, didn't allow the senators to even see what was in the bill. Another one, out of Washington, D.C. this time. The General Accounting Office has asked to investigate the White House anti-drug staff. It seems that they have been sending their people more or less surreptitiously to other states to work against drug reform, even though that's not part of their mandate from Congress. And here's one last story before we break for some other items. The New York Times on April 7th said, as of this point in time, 12% of African men aged 20 to 34 years of age are now in jail. Now, this is according to a report released from the Justice Department. It says that by the time, you know, they live a lifetime, a black man has a 1 in 4 chance of going to prison, of spending time in these great U.S. prisons. If you'll give us just a second, we're going to be right back with the Romeo Dogs.
Well, we're on a journey for justice, which simply means we're traveling the country to educate people in what primarily has been hinterland places. We've been to Appalachia, into small towns, large urban areas, in hopes of mixing people together, people that don't ordinarily meet others of like mind or coming together where we come into a town. And basically what we're trying to do is leave, in most cities, of course Houston has a very active group, but most towns don't. So what we try to do is come into an area, have a city commissioner show up, such as what's happened in about 4 places, other community leaders, clergymen, affected people, prisoners of family, family of prisoners, other loved ones of prisoners, former prisoners. So when we've left, they have more organizing skills and a broader network within to work. It's all been kind of experimental for us because we did go into prison towns where we rented rooms so that after prison visitation, family members who were in town to visit on Saturday and Sunday could spend the evening with us on Saturday, where we would teach them how to organize in their communities. So, and we just finished the Critical Resistance Conference in New Orleans this last weekend, and it was supreme, great. There was probably at least 700 people there. I'd have to get on their website and check, but it was all prison abolitionists, because, you know, that's another thing we're starting to talk about, prison abolition, because we don't need any more new prisons. And we need to learn to handle problems in communities rather than punishment. And we have over 2 million prisoners now, and the stats are terrible. If you look on April 7th in the New York Times, Fox Butterfield reported on it, but the Sentencing Project has released a new report that it's horrifying, the amount of time and the amount of young black men that are sent to prison. And I contend, you know, as far as drugs goes, because most of this imprisonment has to do, or a large part of it has to do with drug law violations, is what people don't seem to understand yet is the fact that white, brown, black, and yellow all use drugs equally.
That was Nora Callahan, the director of the November Coalition. She's touring America, waking people to the fact that we can make a difference, that we can end this crazy drug war. Now, as I said, we're going to have the Romeo Dogs with you, and I'm proud to have them here in the studio with me. We've got Danny Earnwood on my left. How you doing?
I'm doing great, doing great.
Who you bring with you today? Who are all these folks?
Oh, this is the Romeo Dogs, my brothers in crime, Mitch Jacobs, Rex Weary, Steve Wood over there on the drums.
And, welcome, gentlemen.
We play in a local band here in town, Romeo Dogs. I'm sure many of our friends are out there listening. We'd like to bid them a fine, fair hello.
I understand you guys are going to be playing at Walter's on April 20th, 420.
Yep. 420 day, that's what we're going to be doing.
The 420 Houston's Walter. Washington Avenue Music Fest. There's going to be 7 venues, or is it 8? I don't know, don't know, correct me. Up and down Washington Avenue, the clubs include the Rhythm Room, Walter's, Silky's, Fat Cats. There's going to be a 420 stage. There's going to be an outdoor hemp stage. There's also going to be a stage at the warehouse. Folks, you got to show up for this. It's going to be great. Over 50 bands.
They've added the warehouse next to the Rhythm Room now. There's another venue.
Yeah, I hear they're going to be have an open kitchen, so if you don't have to leave, you can just stay right in the neighborhood.
Open kitchen.
Stay in the neighborhood.
I hope they got beans and rice over there.
Gentlemen, would you do me the favor of playing us a song? You told me you got this song, Miss Pinkerton?
Got a song for you called Miss Pinkerton.
I'd love to hear it.
Just start it off. I got traveler's blood inside me, and the road is mine.
Dogs. Thank you, gentlemen. That was great. I appreciate it, Danny.
Song called Mr. Pinkerton.
I was wondering if you had a chance to see that guitar. Was it an Ovation?
Ovation Electric 76 Viper.
76 Viper, a vintage guitar, folks. Beautiful. You'll have a chance to win it in a raffle.
Trying to get the Reverend to sign it.
If we can get Billy up here.
Right.
Yes, sir. Gentlemen, I understand that, this is going to last from 3 to midnight. There's going to be a chance to see up to 53 bands if you can scoot up and down the street quick enough there. And it ain't that far, folks, all up and down Washington. I think that comes to about 14 cents a band.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet deal.
Sounds like a damn good deal.
A portion of the proceeds helps NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, right here in Houston, working to keep the feds off your heads. Anyway, folks, if you get the chance, come on. It's after you've had your turkey or ham or whatever the heck you have there on Thanksgiving.
Do me a favor, if you would. Would you go ahead and mention the guys come all the way from cross town, Heavy Stoned? And I figured that's appropriate band for the 420 Fest.
Heavy Stoned. Yes, indeed. They're going to be showing up at the warehouse. That's the place with the open kitchen, by the way.
Right.
I tell you, folks, the outdoor stage, the hemp stage, is free. If you just can't afford it, we're going to have people, bands out there, by the handfuls. Folks, you just can't go wrong.
The 420 NORML stage.
The 420 NORML stage, indeed. We're going to have speakers from the Libertarian Party, from Cop Watch. We're going to have folks from NORML and the Drug Policy Forum of Texas. We hope to have a few doctors, lawyers, who knows, out there to help you. And
I'm sorry, buddy. I just wanted to tell you that we're also going to have some professional poets that are actually writing some stuff in reference to 420. that are going to be joining your speakers.
I don't know if you caught that. We're going to have some poets out there, with some work they produced in regards to 420 should be entertaining as well. I also want to note that this, I want to give great thanks to the Houston Music Alliance and Graphics Production for all their great work in putting this together. Romeo Dogs, we got about time for one quick song. What you got?
Well, we got a Ry Cooter song.
Yeah, Ry Cooter, good man.
A beautiful, beautiful song.
All right.
Here we go.
Texas Mexican.
One, two, one, two, three, four, one.
Understand.
nice. Very nice again. I want folks to know that when you come to this Houston's Washington Avenue Music Fest, you're going to hear sweet music of every variety. We got over 50 bands. It's going to be well worth your while and for a very worthy endeavor. And, gentlemen, I want to thank you for coming out here and doing that for us.
Appreciate you having us.
Thank you.
Right. Not a problem.
Folks, that was What If God Smoked Cannabis. Here in just a second, we're going to bring in Roger Goodman. We're going to want you to give us a call a little bit later. Ask him what they're doing in Washington that we could do here in Texas to make things better for all of us. Our number here is 713-526-5738. We're hoping we're reaching Roger Goodman. Are you there?
Hey, Dean, how you doing?
I'm real good, sir. How are you tonight?
It's actually a little earlier than where it is, where you are.
Well, yeah, that's the benefit, another benefit of living on the West Coast.
Right.
Yes, so. Indeed. Yes, sir, for those who don't know, I've told them that, you know, you're a director, am I right, for the King County Bar Association in Seattle, Washington, and that you guys have some solutions that seem to be gaining acceptance across the country. People are implementing some of your ideas. Tell us what you're doing up there.
Well, actually, I'm the director of the Drug Policy Project at the King County Bar Association. I can't say I'm the director of the entire association, but what happened a couple of years ago was the president of the Bar Association, he just thought he had to publish a monthly piece in the bar newspaper. And normally that's sort of a boring piece nobody reads, and he thought, you know, what if I write about the drug war? And he wrote a beautifully eloquent piece. He named it, Are We All on Drugs? And as a member of the bar, I read that piece. And he just talked about the tragic failure of the drug war and that we have to find a new way. And at the end of the piece, he said, anyone interested in changing our drug laws, please contact me. And out of the woodwork came literally hundreds of busy professionals. I'm an attorney, and many other attorneys contacted him. And all of a sudden, we had a room full of people. He called a meeting where the county prosecutor attended, half of the judges in the county, defense attorneys, interested citizens, and he decided to set up task forces, and we spent a year working on it and found actually some pretty disturbing stuff. And you probably know all these statistics already anyway.
But no, let's share them with the audience.
Actually, I've got some Texas figures. I was just reading recently that this is in the Houston Chronicle. December 15th of last year, 2002, in the last 5 years in Texas, there have been 58,000 convictions for drug offenses. 77% of them, basically three-quarters of them, involved less than 1 gram. In other words, these are folks who are addicted to drugs themselves, and they're basically selling to each other. They're not organized drug dealers. They're not the criminal enterprises that aren't hooked, and they're just profit-driven and violent. Those are not the guys we're catching. We're catching poor, mostly dark-skinned folks who need help. They need healing, not punishment. And so, but what we're doing is housing them at $25,000, $26,000, $27,000 a year, you know, per prisoner. Plenty of drugs in prison. Drug addiction continues in prison. They come out and they go round and round, and it's just costing us a ridiculous amount of money. The lawyers who got involved in this in Seattle, they said, we can't even hear our normal civil cases and the other criminal cases, you know, what I would think of as a biblical crimes, you know, rape and robbery and murder. They weren't being heard either. Half of the docket of the courthouse is with these drug cases, these small drug cases. So justice isn't being done in other cases either. That was the first impetus. But, you know, since we looked at it, we found that this drug war is not reducing drug use. It's not reducing public costs. It's actually promoting more crime because, you know, criminal enterprises take over when you don't have any control over drug, when the government doesn't have any control over these drugs.
It's like a jobs program.
Basically, yeah. I mean, we're letting the most violent, the nastiest people take over the business, and it shouldn't be that way. This is the, you know, what happens when you try to prohibit something, but the demand is going to continue. But in the meanwhile, we're undermining public health. Like I said, we're clogging the courts, and there's this disproportionate effect on racial minorities and the poor that I was just talking about. We're eroding civil rights. We you know, law enforcement now has the authority to go into a locked trunk of your car and into a locked container inside the trunk. Only looking for drugs. This is the so-called drug exception to the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. And now we have maybe the drug exception to the First Amendment of the Constitution. You were just talking about the Rave Act,
yes,
where you can't even, you know, assemble if there might be a likelihood that drugs could be used. So our liberties are really being, eroded. And then, of course, internationally, too, we try, you know, eradicating coca from Colombia and, meanwhile, poisoning their fields. And they don't grow subsistence crops a different place from coca. We're poisoning everything.
Sure, we move them further into the jungle, further polluting the environment.
Yeah, I mean, we cannot eradicate it. And even if we try to, we don't give an honest effort for, you know, crop substitution, but that doesn't work anyway. And in any event, in Venezuela and in Peru and Ecuador, it just pops up. You know, you push it down one place, it's going to pop up another place.
The old balloon effect.
This is, you know, the nature of the modern world is that drug use is integral to it. We can't, you know, this drug-free America fantasy is a dangerous one. And I think we have to realize that we can only manage the problem of drug abuse, and we can't eradicate it and can't eliminate it. And in the meanwhile, you know, we have fewer civil liberties and skyrocketing costs and all these health effects. What we're doing isn't working. You know, that's the conclusion we've come to. What we're doing isn't working. And now we're on a second phase, and we've got literally hundreds of professionals, doctors, lawyers, nurses, university scholars, social workers, biochemists, pharmacists, you name it, working in different task forces and working groups, eventually bringing proposals to the legislature. And that's, of course, what we need ultimately is changes in the law. And so we have actually been a little bit successful. We got drug sentences reduced, the only place in the country where they're reducing sentences for drug sales. But not only that, taking the savings, because we're, you know, reducing prison costs, we actually capture those savings and put it into drug treatment. So it's a pretty good idea. Now, it's only sort of a 1 or 2 millimeter move in the right direction because it's still firm criminal justice control. We've got court-supervised treatment, you know, so if you fail, you still go back to jail. But at least we're reducing incarceration. It's sort of a first step. So we're encouraged.
Sure. Roger, let me interrupt here 1 second. Want to alert folks, they are listening to Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war on KPFT Houston and Galveston, 89.5 FM, and on the Sirius Radio Network. Our guest is Roger Goodman, director. He works with the King County Bar Association in Washington, in Seattle, Washington. And, Roger, you've been hearing the stories here in Texas. I mean, I'm ashamed of the drug war in general, but I'm just truly embarrassed by what's going on in Texas. We have the bigotry in Tulia. We have the you know, the hustle with the pool chalk in Dallas. And then we have this outrageous crime lab that, you know, was just a rubber stamp.
I want to sound a positive note for Texas, because there are some opportunities, and I think that your listeners ought to know about this. They don't have to listen in despair. There's something they can do. And there are a couple of bills right now in the state legislature in Austin. And if they contact their legislators and get active on this, maybe there could be steps towards change. And let me give you some of that information.
Well, sure. Go ahead.
It's strange. I'm here in Seattle, Washington, but I'm giving you information about the Texas legislature. I just found out about this today.
Well,
I think what I'm going to do first is read you a paragraph. This is a guy. His name is Howard Woolridge. He's a former police officer. There's a national organization called Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. They actually have their own website, which is www.leap, L-E-A-P.
Oh, yes. He's been a guest here. He's a great man.
Jack Cole, right. Well, they've got this network of law enforcement folks who are speaking up on this, and Howard was very, very eloquent. He said, there's an old Turkish proverb that says, no matter how far down the wrong road you have to go, turn around. Prior to 1919, Texas policy toward dangerous drugs used the personal and family responsibility approach. In 1919, Texas made everything but cigarettes illegal, and 84 years later, we're still on the prohibition road. We need to get off this wrong road as soon as possible. It has always and always will be a total failure. $500 billion, 200,000 Americans killed, establishing the largest prison system in the world. Drugs are cheaper, stronger, and easier to buy than ever. And he's saying that in law enforcement, they know that every drug dealer ever arrested, shot, or killed is quickly replaced. So the 77 prisons in Texas are now full of drugs and drug dealers and as plentiful as bluebonnets in spring. Well, now, he was testifying for a couple of bills that I'm going to give you the numbers here. They're both House bills. One is House Bill 2316, which would reduce penalties for crack, other forms of cocaine and heroin from a two-year down to a one-year sentence. And I know you're still going to be going to prison for it, but cutting it in half is a first step, like we say. The other bill is House Bill 715, which would move possession of less than 1 ounce of marijuana down to a C misdemeanor, again, reducing the penalty. So see if you can make some difference there. Contact your state legislators about House Bill 715 and House Bill 2316.
And if I may add, they can reach them through the Houston Normal site. We have a link there where it provides ways to reach your legislators. And you just go to HoustonNORML.org, and there's a link. Type in your zip code. It'll pop up with a screen with your legislators.
And I can tell you that here in Washington State, we're doing the same thing. States all over the country are suffering from the most severe budget deficits since the Great Depression, and they can't afford to lock up nonviolent drug users anymore. And they know this. And you talk to secretaries of corrections in the states, and they don't want to deal with drug users. They know that people who have drug problems need to get treatment in the community, and it's much cheaper and much more effective. And then, of course, there's the much larger philosophical question, should we be punishing people for what they put into their bodies? It's kind of an odd concept, because if we punish people for what they put in their bodies, what's next? Chocolate cake or the same logic, we should be punishing anorexics for not eating or punishing bulimics for not holding their food in. It's the same type of silly logic. So what we need actually is government regulation and control of drugs, not government attempt to control people. And that's the thing that we've come to realize, is that our drug war is an attempt at social control, people control, and it's not working. Instead, we need to control the drugs themselves, because as I said in the beginning, the drugs are now in control of criminal enterprises, the most violent, nasty people around, and we want to put them out of business. And so we think there's a way to do it. What we're doing is coming up with a very specific regulatory system that will work for us in Washington State, but it could be a model for any other state too.
Certainly could. I've read through much of it, and I think it's well thought out and, well worth looking into for our Texas legislators. Folks, I want to let you know we will be taking some calls here in just a couple of minutes. Please give us a ring here at 713-526-5738. Roger, I read this thing in the New York Times, and it amazes me. We have over 2 million people. Americans sitting in jail because of this crazy drug, or predominantly because of that. Mm-hmm. And since in the last 25 years, it's actually quadrupled.
That's right.
The drug war has taken what was 500,000 state and federal, turned it into 2 million. Mm-hmm. And, I find it outrageous that you know, they can justify this somehow as providing for public safety.
Well, I mean, it's unbelievable that it's at this point it cannot be justified. And I think what's the tide is really starting to turn, because what I see, for instance, with the like the White House Drug Czar's office, they have a bureaucratic imperative now, because, you know, to justify an $11 billion budget, they have to make up things like the fact that marijuana is so dangerous that, you know, you try it once and you get hooked, or that the casual user is the vector for this disease that's going to spread through society, and this type of scare talk, which gets to folks. But if marijuana is out of the picture, the drug war is over, because what we're talking about with the drug war really is a majority of marijuana use, minor use, use that doesn't, you know, isn't troublesome. And in fact, I think there were 630,000 arrests for marijuana last year, something like that, more than all violent crimes combined. That's what the police are doing. And instead of, you know, 50% of the murders out there are unsolved. So it would be better for law enforcement to focus their efforts on something that would, you know, show some results. But again, if marijuana is taken out of the picture, then what we have are people with health problems, people hooked on cocaine and heroin and so on. And if you look at the whole population, it's a very, very small percentage of people. It would be clear that it is then a health problem. Then it wouldn't be a moral issue anymore so much. And yet we still haven't gotten over this psychological barrier. So, but what we're doing here is, as professionals, as lawyers and doctors and the kind of stuffed shirts in the world, we're saying, wait, we can't do this anymore. We can't afford it. Criminal sanctions for this type of activity are inappropriate. They are ineffective. They're costly. We're not protecting our children. We're undermining health. We're not reducing crime. We're not enhancing public order. It's just not working. And I think, you know, we've heard this message before. This isn't news. But the fact that lawyers and doctors and all these professionals downtown are saying it, that's the news. And all of a sudden, people listen. So we call a news conference. People show up. We ask for meetings with legislators. The meetings happen. It leads to legislation. So I think that's the strategy that we're excited about, is it's not the message so much as the messenger.
Right. I think about here in Texas, you know, it is changing. I don't know if you get a chance to see Tom Marshall's articles in the Houston Chronicle. But, you know, he's pointing out that this emperor has no clothes.
Right.
You know, he's putting it in the largest newspaper in the state. And it's becoming known. People know a change has to occur. It's just like, I don't know, it's like it's a plague. No one wants to go up and touch it for fear of what could happen to them, I guess, if they were to say, let's make a change.
Well, there has been, and this is another one of our messages, even talking about change, even just bringing it up has led to a visceral reaction. You know, I'm not going to talk about it. And we're not, we have to keep fighting this war. We know the war is going to go on forever, but we have to be vigilant, because, you know, there's no other way, and any other alternative is going to be dangerous. Well, we need to get beyond that visceral reaction and look at the facts, look at the undeniable, objective facts. And that's what we did. We set out to, catalog basically the failure of the drug war, and go to our website too, which is kcba.org, King County Bar Association, kcba.org, and you'll see the Drug Policy Project, that we have all these facts laid out. So we're unapologetic about it. There's nothing to hide. And so we really do need to make a shift. We can't afford it anymore. And I think it has had a morally degrading effect as well.
Okay, Roger, I'm going to give you folks out there one more shot. If you want to call in, talk to Roger Goodman, our number is 713-526-5738. Anybody out there on Drug Sense have a question, shoot it our way. Roger, you know, you stop and think about it. I'm not a lawyer, and it just bugs the crap out of me that, like, the General Accounting Office says that the White House anti-drug staffers go out and mingle and actually, I think, intimidate and bully to try to, you know, influence elections around the country, you know, relating to drug reform, medical marijuana, or what have you. Is that legal?
Well, I guess it's challengeable. I don't think it's honorable. I don't think it's appropriate for a public official to use public dollars to influence elections directly or indirectly. We actually saw this in Ohio in the last election, where the governor and his wife on, you know, on the public dime, quite a bit, used their time to oppose a drug reform initiative there, which would have replaced incarceration with treatment for first and second time drug possession cases, not even drug sales, very small drug cases. And this has also happened elsewhere in the country, too, where the fear has led folks to vote against the facts. And so, yeah, I find it very disturbing that public officials would use public resources to try to influence elections that way.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I often think about, well, it just drives me nuts, the Sheetrock scandal, the Tulia scandal, the lab scandal here, and that nobody really does anything about it. All the officials sit on their hands and wait to, hell, I don't know what's going to happen. It's like no one wants to touch it, even when it's got to be somebody's obligation, and
right.
Yet it just sits there.
Well, you know, it takes some courage, and like I was saying, the president of the Bar Association here, he had the courage, and he wrote this piece in the newspaper, and people wrote it, and all of a sudden, reading it, they realized, wow, I've got some company here. I've been thinking about, you know, the drug war is a failure for a long time, but I'm afraid to talk about it. Well, now all of a sudden, we're sort of mainstreaming the issue because, like I said, we have doctors and lawyers and pharmacists and teachers and scholars, and folks look around and realize that they're not just a voice in the wilderness. And then that gives politicians cover because they too, you know, privately they will admit that our drug laws are misguided. And that the penalties for, you know, small drug offenses are way out of proportion. I mean, here in Washington State and certainly on the federal level, the penalties and the average time served for drug offenses is much more than for manslaughter, for like child molestation in the second degree. You know, I mean, we went through all these different crimes. And so people understand this. It's just that they're afraid of being labeled soft on crime at election time. And so what happened was, again, we sort of gave a little bit of cover. We laid out the facts as establishment group, and then lo and behold, the three-quarters of the legislature approved the sentence reduction and looking at it in more of a health way than a criminal way, and now we've mainstreamed the issue. So it really takes courage from somebody just to start, and that's what we're doing now nationwide, inviting other bar associations to do the same thing. So saying to the president of the Bar Association, look, this may sound really scary, and you're going to ask your members to you know, consider this issue, but you will be surprised at the remarkable reaction, the only positive, where the membership of the bar will get very excited, the relationship between other professions, between doctors and lawyers will improve, and lawyers will have more of a political voice, too. So some bar associations have actually expressed interest around the country, and I'm starting to go around the country and consult with them.
Well, let's see what we can do down here in Texas. Roger, we're starting to get some contacts coming in here. Seems we have John from Houston on line one. Hello, John.
Hey, Dean. How's it going?
It's going well. Did you have a question for Roger Goodman?
Yeah, a little bit of a question and a comment.
Well, yes, sir.
Well, you know, I just can't help but, and I've been relating these two things together for a long time. You know, as soon as the war on terrorism really took this abrupt upturn after 9/11, I was immediately saying, you know, hey, look, people, you know, this government that we're all jumping on the bandwagon for has never been able to differentiate who was friend or foe. That's the reason why they were having a civil war on their own citizens. And I hear Bush recently declared a new holiday, POW Day. And we're sitting here in a country with, what is it, 500,000 prisoners of the war on drugs, mm-hmm. a war on an inanimate object. Mm-hmm. And I can't help but wonder, how can we turn public sentiment, you know, in our favor and against the war on drugs, which, I don't know, it really is apparently some kind of a war. And I wonder if we could, you know, maybe, I don't know, shift the focus, de-escalate the war on terrorism, I mean, the war on drugs, maybe de-link it to the war on terrorism. It just seems... I don't know. What can we do?
Well, let me tell you, the public sentiment is already against the war on drugs. The Pew Charitable Trust, a year ago, they did a poll, and 75% of Americans believe that what we're doing is not working, that the war on drugs is a failure. 75%. So the clear majority of Americans know that what we're doing doesn't work. Now, the next question is, what do we do instead? And strangely, when you ask the question, what do we do instead, it breaks down 50-50 again, where half of Americans say, you know, we shouldn't be locking people up, and we should be focusing on health care and treatment. But the other 50% say, well, we should continue to criminalize it, even though half of them just said that the drug war doesn't work. So it really is, I mean, I think in America we are down to this 50-50 split, which means that any election can go any way, and that means politics. And this is why I was talking about these bills to lobby for in the legislature. And really, you know, you can turn somebody around one person at a time. You don't have to speak to large groups. Talk to your neighbor, your friends, your schoolmates, you know, your workmates. Just 5 minutes examining this issue, everybody goes the same direction, which is the direction of reform, you know, saving money, sending the right message to kids, focusing on health and public order. So Yeah, go ahead.
I think he had to get off or something.
Okay.
Okay. We had a message come in from the Drug Sense chat line. It's from Richard Lake. He's asking you, Roger, how is the medical marijuana law working in Washington, and is the DEA going after folks like they are in California?
I don't know yet of any. There are certainly prosecutions of people who are using marijuana. And who are cultivating it for, you know, for medical purposes. The Medical Marijuana Act that we passed here by Citizen Initiative a few years ago is not very clear, and the prosecutors and the conservative judges have been using it to prevent the use of marijuana for medical purposes, and the legislature needs to fix it. They tried in the last month and failed. They're going to set up some sort of a discussion group over the next year, so we're a little bit frustrated. In the meanwhile, we hear that prosecutors, county prosecutors, the district attorneys in the counties are getting a lot of pressure from the federal government, basically from Ashcroft and the Department of Justice, to go after. I'm not sure go after sick people, but I'm sure they wouldn't mind. And this is what, of course, we know is happening in California. It's shameful. It really is. But, yeah, we are feeling pinched, and despite having a law on the books, the federal government is laying its heavy hand down.
Thank you, Roger. I wanted to alert folks that you can join up with some of the best reformers in America online right now if you go to drugsense.org/chat if you want. There's also a link there for chat, but it's drugsense.org.
Great website.
Yes, sir. Okay, we have one more caller, line two. Butch, are you there?
Yeah, hi.
Hello, Butch. Do you have a question for Mr. Roger Goodman?
Question and sort of just a statement. God bless Rosenthal and his efforts on helping people with their medical usage. But I'm just speaking for just folks in general, like myself, that just like drugs just for fun, you know, all my life. I hide from my teachers and parents as a kid. Now it's my kids and employers as an adult. And it doesn't really bother anybody. It doesn't really do anything. It doesn't change anything. And I see the system. They have too much money involved in the policing, the judging, the courts. They have a lot tied up in it. They're not going to let it go.
We have to expose
the drug war is not just so much helping the medical marijuana people, which they need it more than I do, obviously. But I don't know. It's just...
Well, it doesn't feel good to be afraid all the time, does it? I mean, you're...
No, it doesn't, but that's just the way it is. And so, you know, you just got to, you know, just avoid everybody, and that's just the way it is.
I mean,
it's always been. It'll never change.
As a reformer, I'm hoping that it doesn't have to be that way.
Right, and you got to look at Belgium and Netherlands and even Canada, even Alaska, even California or Oregon.
Look at the United States. Look at the United States.
Yeah, United States. Some of these states have the idea that, you know, give a person a break.
Well, I think that our society can change because, you know, black folks couldn't vote before. They weren't even citizens. Women couldn't vote till 1920. We've had some major changes in this society. We used to burn witches, you know. So I think change is possible, and maybe your children or grandchildren will look back and say, wow, they used to lock people up for that? That's amazing. But
you're
right.
Just the long haul. Eventually, everybody will get tired of the big fight.
Right. Well, you know what? There are five good reasons to argue for drug policy reform. The first, and in no particular order, one of them is what you're talking about, civil liberties. Let me do what I want because I'm not bothering anybody. Another reason is we need to protect children. Right now, with the black market, children have much too easy access to drugs, and frankly, children shouldn't have access, and parents and teachers and society in general should be protecting them more. Another argument is health. We should be focusing on health care, not locking people up and punishing people. Another argument is crime. We should be able to reduce crime by regulating drugs. And the final argument is money. We're spending too much money. We're wasting our money. And you know what? All those other four arguments about kids and health and public order and civil liberties, unfortunately, those arguments don't work very well these days.
Exactly. And the last argument on top of that is all the expenditure from America into places like Colombia brings the cocaine here, and into Afghanistan brings the heroin here,
yep,
et cetera, so on.
Yeah, we're destabilizing.
There we go.
But
not
you know
only
what?
That, they fly it around. Look at Iran Contra and CIA,
oh, yeah,
and Bushy that was looking the other way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, it goes on and on.
But you know what? Even if none of those arguments work, if nobody cares about civil liberties or the fact that we're interfering with foreign governments or that, you know, that certain areas are disorderly and unstable and that health is eroding for the poor, if you talk about money, that works. And right now, there is no money.
There's no money.
The states
and the faster
just,
they pop the million-dollar bombs, the sooner they'll come back to Raytheon, and there will be no money.
Well, now that's
to pay
course,
them.
You know, there's no money. Maybe there's money to lock up folks on the federal level because they keep going into deficit situation. But on the states, you're required to balance the budget, and these state legislatures have no choice. And all over the country, Kentucky and North Carolina and Oklahoma, Washington
they're
State,
they're starting to look at some options.
They're
huh?
letting them out. They're letting them out of prison.
Well,
and you know what? There's not a lot of risk.
Putting them on some kind of probation.
Or even nothing at all. Just you
yeah,
know,
let them ride. You know, I don't even remember in Austin it was some sort of pretty liberal kind of, you know, walk away kind of thing.
Right.
Well, gentlemen, on that positive sounding note, I think we're going to have to start wrapping it up. Butch, I thank you so much for the call.
All right.
Roger, any closing comment that you'd like to give the listeners?
Well, like I said, we... two things. First of all, we've been complaining about the drug war, and we've been cataloging all of its horrors. Now is time to buckle down and devise a workable alternative, something that people can point to instead of just complaining about it, something positive. And that's what we're working on in Seattle, and we want to spread that model across the United States. The second thing is, like I said before, you're not voices in the wilderness. We now have professionals, you know, joining in this fight, and so it's all sectors of society, and that actually is very, very important for the movement. It's not just a bunch of fringies here. We're talking about basically the silent majority of America, and we need to wake them up.
Roger, thank you so much for spending the evening with us. We hope to do this again soon, and think about how we can help Texas. We sure need
okay.
some help.
Thanks, Dean.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Well, good night, sir.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay.
Homer, you're doing drugs. Nah, and now I'm guilty of possession. I could go to prison. Unless I testify against you.
Marge, it's making my eyes better. And it's legal. I could walk up to the president and blow smoke in his stupid monkey face. And he'd just have to sit there grooving on it.
Fool me once. Shame on you. If you fool me, you can't get fooled again.
What time is it? 4:20.
It's time for the second annual Washington Avenue 420 Music Festival benefiting Houston Normal. Join us April 20th, 3 to midnight at Silky's, Fat Cats, Walters, and the Rhythm Room. Listen to speakers from the Drug Policy Forum of Texas, Cop Watch, and Normal. Hear 48 bands, including Felix Madison and Jimmy's Pawn Shop. Sign up for voter registration and a letter-writing campaign for Texas House Bill 715. Enter a raffle for a vintage 1976 Ovation guitar donated by Big Green Machine. Get your advance tickets for only $8 from the ticket stop at 713-526-8889. Houston Normal does not advocate the breaking of any laws, only the reform of unjust laws. See HoustonNormal.org for more details. The Washington Avenue Music Fest is produced by the Houston Music Alliance and Graphics Production.
Okay, that's Houston's Washington Avenue Music Fest. We're going to be talking about that tomorrow on the enemy station, KLOL 101. This is going to be 7:25 tomorrow morning. We're going to talk about drug war reform. We're going to talk about the Music Fest. Hope you tune in. Once again, organization, the King County Bar Association, KCBA.org. Okay, folks, this is an editorial from Cultural Baggage. The war on terror is nothing new. For 88 years, this nation has been on an escalating crusade to fight the distribution of weapons of mass destruction. Millions of suspected U.S. citizens have been imprisoned, their families destroyed, their possessions forfeited. One out of every eight black men between the ages of 20 and 34 is now in prison in the United States. The government's contention is that most of these men were involved in an effort to destroy our nation with chemical weapons. By continuing this war, the U.S. now has four times more black men per capita in prison than did South Africa at the height of apartheid. With more than 2 million U.S. citizens in jail, we are now the leading jailer nation of this earth. With 5% of the people, we jail 25% of the earth's total prisoners. We rend our constitution, give the cops a wink, and bend our morals just enough to feel safe. The corruption of the drug war is well known, is worldwide, nationwide, and just how safe are we here in Texas, where the, quote, morals of our elected and appointed officials allow justice to be represented by the actions of scorn for human life. And to name just a few, the outrageous bigotry in Tulia, Texas, the hustle with pool chalk in Dallas, and the grand debacle of the Houston crime lab. All we need to end this war of terror is to destroy the profit for those who manufacture and sell these chemical agents. Liberty, justice, individual autonomy, and true regulation are the American way to restore dignity to those who now feel they are on the outside. This is a quote. I beseech you, in the bowels of Christ, think it possible you may be mistaken about the course you and President Bush urge us to adopt to fight drugs. That's from Nobel laureate Milton Friedman. Regulate, distribute to adults, destroy the cartels, fund the nation, and stop the deaths. Please think about what you can help to do to end this madness. It's not slavery or Jim Crow laws, nor is it a poll tax. It's the first war meant to last forever. For my producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the Unvarnished Truth.